How about them Braves? This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan Injured. Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury.
We've been trying to avoid this conversation.
That transition actually applied in that scenario.
I'm going to need Morgan & Morgan eventually if I keep having to watch one run, zero runs games that offense is putting out.
Well, let me tell you the score. 5-1, they lost to the Nationals. Now you can carry on with your
Yeah, because I can see my hand. I can see myself pulling a Brian Kelly, but actually having passion behind slamming my hand on the table and hurting it.
Well, you would have already had it planned 30 minutes ago if you were actually going to pull a Brian Kelly.
Yeah, that's right. I don't know what to tell you. Michael, you want to look at the positives? Michael Harris is seeing the ball at the plate. That's the positive. I mean, well, because
positivity in your
voice. Jorge Soler, too.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
That was your offense.
Yeah. So Max Fried didn't really give you a maximum Fried effort, as Randy McMichael would say. He was not great. He tried to grind, but he didn't get the job done. You just need more. Look, you just can't score 12 runs one night and let Jake Irvin go out there. And I saw it. I did the research on Jake Irvin, and going into last night's game, Jake Irvin had been pretty good against you. In fact, in three starts, Irvin had only given up 2 earned runs against the Braves, and in 17 and a third innings, and he continued that success against this Braves lineup.
You know what the biggest indictment is for me as far as Irvin's line is? You got through 6 innings pitched with 84. You threw 84 pitches. Like, you weren't even having good at bats last night. You know, the Braves, and we've talked a bunch. And I know that State Cat Chipper Jones on yesterday talking about this Braves team, and they're just not doing the small things right a lot of the times, unless they're hitting home runs, which is what happened 2 nights ago. But last night was not one of those nights, and you keep the ball in the park, and then all of a sudden it becomes a struggle to actually plate runs. So
we're sitting here again.
It's frustrating. Yeah,
I know. We're sitting here again.
I was wondering.
God. The worst part about it? Is his voice in that soundbite? Cue it back up, Dylan. It doesn't sound angry.
Here again.
It sounds whiny. Well, he's sitting here again. No, put some bass in your voice. Sound angry.
No.
We're sitting here again.
He's so spot on. He's so spot on. Because you know why? A lot of the times when people are that angry and you actually do kind of hit the table, it's not in the middle of a word. You know what I mean? Like, it's again.
Have you ever seen Brian Kelly angry before in person?
In person? No, because I don't.
Okay, I'm just asking a question.
But I've seen him angry on the sidelines, there is no, when Brian Kelly is angry, he has this face that turns is red as the 92.9 writing in the logo. I mean, it's his blood red, and he starts spitting as he talks, and his neck just crunches up and it disappears,
you believed him? You thought he was genuine?
I'm not saying I don't know him enough to make that assumption or read on his anger, degrees of anger. But I will say, maybe to what you're saying, he did not want to present maybe the sideline Brian Kelly that you see with neck veins popping out in a media setting at a podium. So
we're sitting here again.
Then why slam your fist? Because that's what you're trying to put out.
Maybe that's a more muted version of it. I don't know. I'm just.
Maybe we should ask his family what they think.
Maybe you should.
Because I just know that Brian Kelly, since the day he stepped foot on LSU, has been fake. He faked his accent. And look, I will be the first guy to step. I defended Brian Kelly when he took that job because a bunch of people said he wasn't. He can't coach in the SEC. Yeah, he can. Look, the guy has a lot of I think the guy might have some shortcomings personally in that department, but I think he is one of the best football coaches in college football.
I think he's a great coach.
And is this Brave stuff that bad for you?
I'd much rather criticize Brian Kelly.
I'd much rather talk about Brian Kelly and everything else going on with
him. Well, to sum it up, Tiff, you're back a game behind the Mets now because all they did was get no hit for 8 innings, and then Francisco Lindor puts one over the fence, and they score 5 runs after that. Yeah. And so that's what clutch teams that want to make the playoffs do.
Yeah, Tater. I mean, and I'm not even going to give them that much credit and say, well, that's what clutch teams do. It's just what you're not doing.
Kirk Cousins, the QB, he joined the Rich Eisen show, and he discussed if week 1 is different now than from when he first came into the league.
Hard to say. I think we started sharp, if you will. We moved the football. We converted our first third down. We had a 12-play drive, I think it was, to start the season. I ended up kicking a field goal, but executed pretty well. It was more just over four quarters, did not play great football. And the reality is, in football, you have to string together 5, 10, 12 plays in a row that are flawless to score points on a long drive. And if you have a penalty, if you have a mistake, it can kill the entire drive. And so that efficiency of stringing 10 plays together is, I think, one thing that was a weakness of ours on Sunday that we've got to clean up moving forward.
And it's kind of alluding to the difference in, you know, what how week one is today as opposed to when you used to play multiple preseason games as opposed to not playing
kind
any.
Kind of alluding to like the first drive and rolling in and knocking out 12 plays.
I thought that I want to touch base on something that Dave Archer said yesterday with Andy and Randy and kind of bring it back to what Kirk said here. They were very sharp the first drive. In fact, the only reason why they didn't score a touchdown to me on that drive was the negative play. I'm not going to go into detail, but the negative play on first and goal inside the 10-yard line, and that put them behind the chains. That said, Mike, as a guy who played, how much is there the reality of the situation with basically your conditioning? And what I mean is like when you're in practice, Arch said this, he said, you know, it's that you hit and then you kind of release, right, in practice, and you don't follow through and you don't carry through. And then when you're in a game, it's constant. And you're sometimes what going through a play for 7, 8, 9 seconds, right? 10 seconds maybe.
Yeah.
And how much of that could have been conditioning where this team, they lost sharpness as the game went on due to fatigue?
Well, there's probably something to that, but the bottom line is in the NFL with the regulations you have now that it should be on both sides of the ball, right? The Steelers should have been dealing with all the same issues. And if they're not, and if they're better conditioned, then you need to practice harder. And that's the bottom line. Is that there's so many rules now where you can't do certain things. And to answer your question, I think the average play is like 6 seconds, something along those lines. There's so many things now that you can't do during practice, but everybody's dealing with the same thing. And so that's what kind of evens up things when you talk about a week one matchup. And I know that the thought process out there is the Steelers played in the preseason game and everything else. I don't think that has as quick of an issue or an output in week one as you would be led to believe based on their performance last week.
Speaking of the performance last week, Kirk Cousins' performance was the talk of pretty much every talking head that was on television afterwards. And so, of course, it came up on his appearance with Rich. He talked about if he thinks he was rusty against the Steelers or not.
I asked that question myself, but then when I watched the tape, I thought, you know, I don't know that it's rust. I think there's a level of, there's certainly a lot that's new for all of us,
right,
where, you know, we're all kind of working together for the first time. But again, we started relatively sharp. You know, we moved down the last drive of the half, basically went into a 2-minute mode and went right down the field and scored a touchdown. So there were some parts where you say, no, I mean, we're playing well, moving the football well, seeing things well, feeling the rush well, but we played a strong defense and then we just didn't execute up to our standard, which involves so many things, timing up motion, and formations and play clock and just the subtleties of the operation of football that we're going to have to be much sharper at the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think he nailed on. Well, I do think there was some rust in his decision making. I think at times he looked, well, he says maybe there's some newness, but
sure.
I think newness and rust combined maybe cause issues, but there were, I think it's like, 7 or 8 of the third downs were third and longs, were like 8 or 9 yards plus. And that is when you're playing an elite defense, because the Steelers have an elite defense. I don't think there's
no
any
doubt.
There's nothing, especially their front seven. And then you look at their back half, and that they could be considered elite on their own, and you know, the back 4 or 5. So that's an elite defense. But when you're third and long and you allow Alex Highsmith and TJ Watt to go just to pin their ears back and come at Jake and Caleb McGarry, you're not doing yourself any favors. So I think we can talk about the game plan. We can talk about, was Kirk Cousins healthy? We can talk about, did the offensive line do their job? But the reality of the situation is, Mike, is that you allowed their defense to do exactly what it is they do and be at their best, what they do the best, and that gives yourself no chance to win.
All right, let's go back to the health stuff since you mentioned it. How did he feel during the game? Let's take a listen.
I feel good. Honestly, I felt good during the game. Was really pleased with how my ankle, if you will, not just Achilles, but my ankle felt. Really felt good. Didn't take any big hits. So, you know, after week one, your typical soreness from a game, but nothing too excessive.
After going back and watching this, it's become more clear now than it ever has that there is a difference between being fully cleared and fully healthy, right? He's fully cleared. There's nothing wrong. Nothing wrong with his ankle or with his Achilles. And I think that that's the, you know, what you keep hearing from Raheem and everybody else involved and Kirk, and he, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. That doesn't mean he's like 100% the best version of himself that he's ever been. And I think when you go back and watch the film, and I have to look, that there was a couple people tweeting me videos yesterday. It's very clear that like his heel is on the ground right now. His back heel is on the ground when he's throwing, right? Which is not a good thing. If you're a quarterback, you want to follow through and drive with that back leg and kind of have your weight sort of on the front leg, kind of almost lunging forward after you throw the ball. When your heel is on the ground, you are leaning back, right? You have no power through the hips, and it becomes all arm. So, and that's all Achilles, that's all calf, that's all everything else when you talk about leaning back on it. I've been through these injuries where, you know, your calf muscles kind of dissipate, right, because you can't move them. You're in a cast or whatever else, a walking boot. So I think he is – fully cleared and fully recovered. I just don't think that means he is 100% the best version of himself just yet.
Okay, well then, as a guy that's came back from those, I have to ask, how much of that is a mental thing? And it's a mental injury where you're not mentally trusting yourself yet.
Well, that's something that a ton of guys talk about coming back from ACL. I can't imagine coming back from it. Achilles just feels different to me. I've never had either injury before. But I can't imagine having to come back from that and then having 200-pound guys flying at your face trying to take you out. And also the pressure of trying to get the ball out at the same time. So I think there's a mental hurdle to go through. And a lot of guys talk about, okay, it happens for them in the first game once they take that first hit or maybe make that first cut. So maybe for Kirk Cousins now, he's got this game out of the way. Maybe he does know his own – he knows his own body. Not going to say maybe he doesn't. He does know his own body. Maybe things will look different on Monday.
I think that mentally it can be a big factor. Right now I'm just focused on physically what it might be, right? I mean, maybe he doesn't and the truth of the matter is it has to be more mental moving forward, because I guarantee you he's watching film, and if he notices the same thing that I'm talking about, what's he probably doing? He's probably driving – you know, through practice the next couple of days, driving off that back leg and making sure he's driving into his throws to try to build that muscle back up in his calf.
Well, didn't you guys just love on the heels of this game, no pun intended, overreaction Monday that occurred? Well, let's listen to what Kirk had to say on the Rich Eisen show about trying to ignore all the outside noise.
It's kind of the way the NFL works, but it's part of what makes it so fun for people. And it's important that for us as players and coaches and staff and in the building that, you know, we certainly have a different approach and you kind of ignore the noise, but it doesn't change the fact that when you don't play well, there's going to be noise.
I mean, yeah. To me, it's not that they lost. And I don't think for most Falcons fans, guys, I don't think it's that they lost. I think it's what it looked like and the fact that you felt like at no point in the second half that you had a puncher's chance, because nothing you saw was being changed. The thing that the Steelers were doing well, you weren't reacting to, right? And then all of a sudden it became honed in on what you were trying to do or what you needed to do. And as soon as it became the point where, you know, the Falcons had to kind of pass and create explosive plays to get back into the game, it was like, let's go. They were just teeing off at that point. So I have warned people against overreactions. I think there are reactions that are valid, but overreactions where you're, hey, you know, I'm never watching this team again, I'm selling my tickets, whatever, that's an overreaction. Because I think this team will get better. Told you guys yesterday at 8:30, 8:29 to be exact.
When I told you to get over it.
I was turning. Well, you're going to take credit for that?
Before you guys fight, I just want to make one point, too. A lot of it's compounded with the fact of how last season ended and then the massive amount of hype that surrounded this season. So when you come out in week one the way they did, then yes, a lot of people, not saying it makes it right, but that's probably the reason why a lot of people were so upset about the performance.
I think you're the perfect person to talk about this, too, Tiff, because I've had questions about the fact that we, being Bo and I, hyped up this offense during training camp. And my answer is, like, what else did you think we were going to say? There's no reason to feel bad. I mean, you've been around a ton of training camps. I've never heard anybody be like, man, this team's going to suck. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not what you expect in a training camp.
No, it's not usually the media perspective.
Right.
And no one's really being kind of like the Debbie Downers when it's training camp. It's the start to a new season. There's excitement around. There's new faces. There's rookies. and then veterans trying to help gel a team together. So that's what you're – not to say that's what you're supposed to do, but based on who you got as your quarterback, probably some of the amount of money that he was paid to, and then you look at how they were building this roster and bringing in some of the weapons, even in the receiver core, you know, on the out – or when you're looking at how they're bringing in the receiver core – a lot of different things this season that led you to believe, and you probably should still be excited about your season because it's week one, that you should be optimistic about how this could play out for the Falcons. It's a whole new regime. So, yes, it's warranted. Excitement around that is absolutely warranted. So I don't think people should be maybe in their feelings or be directing stuff at you guys or any other maybe media folks about you guys were gassing this team up and then Sunday happened.